locally owned and operated pharmacies in New York say they're at a precarious tipping point, which could result in locations around the state being forced to close unless, that is, they can get some government relief. To discuss what government relief could look like at the state level, we're going to discuss a handful of bills known as the Pharmacy Rescue Package, which are awaiting Governor Kathy Hochul's signature after passing with large bipartisan support in the state legislature this year. And joining us in the studio for this discussion is Assemblyman John McDonald, a Capital Region Democrat and local pharmacist. Welcome back to the show, John.
Dave, it's good to be here. Thank you.
And on the phone, we have Mike Duto, a registered pharmacist and president of the Community Pharmacy Association of New York State. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you so much. It's certainly my pleasure and honor to be here today.
Well, we'll see about honor, but we'll you know, don't want to make any big statements like that so early on. So John, of these bills, these four that make up this package, what do you think represents the most immediate benefit to independent pharmacists in New York?
Well, you know, it's really a conversation about what's the impact going to be to not only independent pharmacies, but also chain pharmacies throughout the state, which then gets to the bigger issue. What is going to be the impact to the patients, particularly in underserved areas? And I look at the PBM transparency bill as being one of the critical elements, and then we have what's called the pharmacy pass-through bill, which basically simplistically says for those people in Medicaid that currently get paid by the state under the fee-for-service program, pharmacies will be paid the same rate there as they will be in the managed care environment. It's a simple, simple request, but like anything else, David, you know, in Albany, nothing's simple.
Well, you referred to PBMs, a shorthand that people in the health insurance and healthcare sector might know, referring to pharmacy benefit managers. What's going on there with that piece of legislation?
So that legislation actually had been to the altar last year. The governor at the time vetoed the legislation because of the fact that there was a Supreme Court case outstanding questioning whether states had the ability to regulate PBM practices when it comes to programs in the state. That case, the Rutledge case, who was out of Arkansas, one of the more progressive states in our country, I'm sure, said unequivocally that states have the right to do that. That's why Dick Gottfried, who's the lead sponsor of this bill, reintroduced it as is with minimal, if any, changes. And as you know, the legislature, with almost 100% support in both houses, passed these bills. And now it will be at some point in the next 45 days going to Governor Hochul's desk for consideration. And the intention of the bill is simple. Whereas pharmacists, doctors, pharmacies, hospitals, everybody involved in the healthcare system is regulated or licensed by the state of New York, PBMs just sit off in this area where there's no regulation, no oversight. And the bottom line is, my principle, since I was a mayor, I can say this comfortably, is if you're going to accept public money, then there needs to be greater transparency. And bottom line is that these PBMs, which serve an important purpose in regards to managing the prescription drug benefit for the health plans, have also been negotiating in a different level with the pharmaceutical manufacturers, which sounds good, but there's no real clear path of whatever they negotiated for the best net price comes back to the actual payer, or more importantly, benefits the consumer. And the pharmacy community has been upset about this because it's very clear that as the net cost of prescription drugs has gone down over the last 5 to 10 years, pharmacy reimbursement has gone down drastically to the point where pharmacies are actually leaving communities. And Mike can speak to the rural components because he's up in the North Country, but I can speak to the urban areas. Here in Albany, Dave, on Route 32 in the south end of Albany up to my hometown of Cohoes, 4 chain pharmacies have left those communities, and there is no independent pharmacies left in downtown Troy, and maybe one, arguably, in Albany. And the bottom line is a lot of it's credited to the reimbursement being put forth by these PBMs, which nobody really has a clear answer to.
So there's a lot to unpack there, and I want to talk about the number of pharmacies and where that's trending in a bit, but you made the case that PBMs, as they currently operate, do so without any significant, or actually you said any oversight. And it's my understanding, though, that health plans are required to make certain information available about their interactions with PBMs, including amounts for each prescription drug. And because pharmacy spending is overseen by the DOH, the Medicaid Inspector General's Office, and the Department of Financial Services, PBMs come under oversight by them through their interaction with pharmacies. So is that level of scrutiny not enough, or am I misinterpreting the role that those regulators play with regards to PBMs?
It's inadequate, and the Department of Health knows this very well. The Department of Financial Services knows it as well. State after state after state have demonstrated that the PBMs have had these spread pricing routines in place where they've actually been paying pharmacies X and charging the health plan Z, and they've been keeping the Y. And we don't know what the Y is. There's a gap in between. And we've tried to tighten the screws a little bit to get a better idea of it, and we've not been successful in many aspects because we don't have a clear look at exactly what's going on. And I go back to two things. This is public dollars that is procuring these services, and we have no idea where it's going. And when we have, particularly in low-income and minority communities, the lack of pharmacy providers, it's definitely a reason to throw the flag and say we need to have greater light on this issue.
Mike, from your vantage as president of the Community Pharmacy Association of New York State, could you help paint a picture of what the landscape looks like right now with regards to small, middle-sized pharmacies, independently owned pharmacies? Are they closing their doors? Are they on the edge of closing their doors? Or are they growing traditionally, and this has just been a recent blip?
No, I think John summed it up perfectly. This is not a chain issue or an independent issue. It really is a pharmacy issue. And I think, unfortunately, the amount of closures have far outpaced any new entries into the pharmacy industry space here in New York. And it really comes down to one common denominator. It's declining reimbursement. And it's been really difficult to operate, whether you are in a rural setting or in an urban setting. You know, sometimes the costs are different. But at the end of the day, with declining reimbursement and getting paid at or below cost, it's just not sustainable. And I think that trend will only continue to accelerate without some type of relief that these bills do provide.
What do you see then as the benefit to the consumers through this legislation, which theoretically props up these independent pharmacies?
You know, obviously, the Medicaid managed care bill, we're requesting that pharmacies get paid at cost plus a small dispensing fee. And believe it or not, getting paid at cost would be a huge improvement compared to today's reimbursement model. So I think what that would do is immediately stop the decline and preserve patients' access to important pharmacy services by not continuing the trend towards growth of pharmacy deserts. You know, a lot of pharmacies in rural areas provide free prescription delivery. My company does it in every pharmacy. And candidly, in some small towns, we are the only pharmacy for 40 miles in any direction. When patients can't get to us, we go to them. That's something that those patients can't afford to lose. And we feel that both of these bills really would address the issue that is pushing us in the wrong direction from a pharmacy accessibility standpoint.
So I represent Albany and Troy, right? Urban areas, high minority populations, high poverty, 20-25% children poverty alone. And the reality is there is a dearth of pharmacy services because there's no pharmacies located in these communities. So what does it impact the consumer? Did you ever hear of COVID vaccines?
I am familiar with them.
Yeah, you're familiar with them, right? Do you know that the percentage of individuals vaccinated is horrifically low in these urbanized areas? Because, quite frankly, they don't have that neighborhood pharmacy, whether it's chain or independent, they could just walk into. And there's just not that outreach and that relationship. And I think that's a major issue. You know, it's funny, everyone talks about healthcare disparities, particularly minority populations. This is an opportunity for the governor to actually walk the walk and talk the talk on this, from my perspective, because it's fine. In the suburbs where there's more commercial plans and the reimbursement's a little bit better, you'll see the large pharmacy operations locating out there. You don't see a running for pharmacies to locate in the south end of Albany or South Troy. And there's a reason why. The state just does not reimburse healthcare providers. It's a constant argument in medicine. It's a constant argument in pharmacy. And when Mike talks pharmacy services, people forget. For 14 years now, every pharmacist who's graduated from a pharmacy college is a doctor of pharmacy. In essence, they could almost run their own practice. And they are taking on more responsibilities, whether it's expanded immunizations overall, COVID immunizations, COVID testing, you name it. And the reality is, it's about one of those things where we don't want to have a discussion of the haves and the have-nots.
If we are increasing reimbursement rates, though, who ends up paying that bill? If it's Medicaid, it's what, state taxpayers?
So really, quite frankly, the discussion is, are we paying more or are the PBMs making less? And nobody really knows unless you read the Wall Street Journal every day and see the earnings that are coming in from some of the larger entities. Some of them, which one of them particularly, interestingly enough, is an insurance plan who owns its own PBM. And this is where we have this odd discussion. You referenced it earlier. You know, aren't the health plans supposed to be overseeing this? Well, when you own the subsidiary that's managing the benefit, I don't know if the oversight is as strong as you think it is.
And is the plan there Anthem? Who's the plan that owns and
it's
operates PBMs?
It's CVS Caremark.
Okay.
CVS actually is able to dictate reimbursement to all pharmacies. I have a CVS 1 mile to the west of me in Cohoes and 1 mile to the east. And I dare say the reimbursement's not the same in those pharmacies. And guess who's getting paid less?
Is it you?
It would be the one in the middle. And that's where pharmacies' plight is today. We are in the middle between PBMs and the drug companies.
But it still sounds like you're guessing, essentially, that any reimbursement rate increases at the Medicaid level will be essentially born out of the profits from PBMs and not resulting in increased costs for the state.
The state pays these plans to manage the Medicare benefit. The state can also say to them, we want to have a floor for reimbursement. And PBMs, you need to figure it out. And if the PBMs think it's not sustainable, although there's only four in the country that do this job, I'm sure somebody else can step in.
So the four bills that make up the so-called pharmacy rescue package are sitting in the Senate waiting to be delivered to the governor. In the interim, Assemblymember, have you heard about any discussions between the legislature and the governor's office about the fate of these measures, whether their executive chamber is looking for some sort of amendments or any other compromises before they act on it?
I've not heard of any of those conversations at this. As you know, it's a new leadership at the state. And I will say this. I met with the new DFS commissioner because DFS will play an integral part of the conversation, particularly when it comes to PBM transparency. And the superintendent was very understanding and said, we understand the history here. We always look for win-win situations. Some of the obstacles that were there in the past are not there, and let's hope that we can find some common ground to work with. But that's the kind of discussion I don't think kicks in until around Thanksgiving, and we'll probably go into the month of December.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblymember John McDonald and Mike Duteau, president of the Community Pharmacy Association of New York State. John and Mike, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.